Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, the very first Italian-American podcast and the home of the Italian-American moment. I'm Frankie D, your very proud host, and we are at ItalianAmericanLife.com, iTunes, Stitcher, the podcast app. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, connect with us on LinkedIn, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. My guest today is Monica Ambala, the professor of music at Merritt College in Oakland, California, and her dissertation focuses on the piano accordion and how it was cultivated and sustained by Italian communities in Northern California. Monica, welcome to the show and thank you for being here.
Hi, Frank. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to share out with your listeners today about this instrument, the history, and how we've got a strong connection to our Italian American history.
And I love that. And that's why this is so special. And I really appreciate it because we have never hit the accordion and it is a big part of our community. And you are just full of knowledge of it. So please tell us how did you get started playing the accordion?
Okay, so very typical to a lot of us, our grandparents loved it, right? And so I grew up as a pianist and a cellist. And then, you know, I was sometime in my 20s. And, you know, I remember my grandfather going, "Ma Monica, perché non vuoi la fisarmonica?" You know, and I thought, oh, yeah, I could pick it up. Let me go, you know, and they're cheap now. And that's something that's really interesting. You can pick one up at a thrift shop, you know, it won't be the best. It'll be broken or maybe not sound so great, but you can find them. They're $50 to $100. And so that's kind of how I got into it. It was just my family really liked the sound and we grew up with accordion music in the house, you know, Frank Morocco and Dick Contino and all of those kind of, you know, and not to mention Myron Florin, right? You know, a lot of people came up with listening to Lawrence Welk and they remember those names. So that's how I got into it at first. And I loved the sound and it was a complicated instrument at the time. But once you get into it, you understand the mechanics of it, then it becomes like a second nature.
I have a question because I'm a non-musical person. Yeah. If someone can play the piano, could they necessarily play the accordion or are they halfway there, so to speak?
Yeah, I like that idea. Yeah, halfway there. So basically, once you have the right side down, which is the piano keyboard side, you're good to go. You have that part. The only thing is you're switching it from horizontal, right, to now vertical. So if you can get past that, but anybody who's pretty proficient in piano can easily transition to an accordion. Absolutely. Why not?
Okay. I know that the San Francisco area, Northern California area, had a big history of the accordion in the Italian communities. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. So basically, you know, we see, obviously, I'm sure on your podcast too, you've covered the immigration quotas and everything. And so right around, you know, the 1880s, when we saw the exclusion acts and things like that, right after that, we have an explosion happening, particularly in North Beach, right? And one thing I do want to remind your listeners is that it's interesting that, you know, everybody gets off Ellis Island, then you got to have money to get that rail ticket. And it was an extra expense for people to consider. So I do want to make a note here that a lot of the people who were coming out to San Francisco and out to the West had the money. They either were sponsored by a company or they had funding that was put together by their town. You know, so that's the first part of it. And then, so we see in the three waves, right? We go through the early 1820s, but for San Francisco, it's the 1880s around that period until the 1910s. That's the big explosion. So we are going to see two huge companies come out of San Francisco. And by the way, there were 9 accordion factories located here in the San Francisco Bay Area.
That's just insane.
9.
I mean, that's crazy. That 9 just shows the popularity at that time, what it was.
It was. And it was a West Coast thing. And everybody thinks, oh, no, New York, you know, Philly. No, it was truly started here. And then these people that were working at these factories, they were Italian. They started saying, I'm going to go out on my own. So then we have Potosa that goes up to Washington. You know, we've got people that are moving out to Philly, to Pennsylvania, to all these areas back east. But it starts out with the two factories, Guarini and Colombo. And Guarini, even just to give you an idea of how far back, and they're right there on, they were there on Columbus Avenue, right in North Beach. They were featured at the Panama Pacific, the World's Fair Expo, right, in 1915. So accordion factories were putting this on display at the time. Like, look at this amazing machine age instrument and what we can do. But it was an Italian product of, it's a craft that you have to consider too, right? So I can jump into that if you want about tracing it back to Italy, but it's up to you.
If you want to
Yeah,
highlight it, that would be
I
awesome.
think it's great. So the really cool connection, and it still continues today, and it's really important to think about this, is where, who's doing this now, right? So there is a small village near Ancona, which is on the Adriatic side, right? And it's called Castelfidardo, Castelfidardo. And this is where the accordion boom sort of happened for Italy at the turn of the century, right? We are going to see a number of factories coming out of that area. And everybody who lives in that little town, when you go to visit, they'll say, "Oh, my father used to work there. My grandfather was a patent person. My aunt used to do this." So everybody in that town knows somebody who worked in the accordion business as far as production is concerned, right? So all of these workers at the turn of the century, when people are getting ready to immigrate, when you came to America, you had to have a skill, right? You had to list that on your Ellis Island. What are you doing here, right? And so part of that was coming to the US. Of course, we talk about the American dream and climbing and all of this, but for that is a very unique skill. And so most of the time, either these companies would have poached those gentlemen that were coming, on the ships, or they said, "Oh, we've got some work for you in San Francisco. Would you be interested?" So that's kind of the connection. And to this day, those companies, now it's changed. There's different names, like PG&E, for example, is over there. They're still in production, and it's continuing these over 100 years techniques, right? That started. It's amazing. So,
But is
and
it
I've
still
been
the
there.
instrument from the beginning? Is it incredibly different or advanced, or is it kind of based off that beginning model?
Right. So, and just to give you some backstory too, it's like if you really want to trace the origins of the accordion, you can go back to the second century, China, right? It's like a dynasty back in those times. Now you fast forward though, they say that the first patent comes out in 1829 in Vienna. And then after the patent is out, kind of all the different creators and inventors at the time kind of took their hands and said, "Let me try my hand at this." So we have prototypes. There are weird prototypes out there all throughout the 1850s. But the one that we kind of have today in our hand, right, is, we have the button style or the piano style, right? And the Italian tradition has been largely the piano style. And so this comes out of a European tradition for sure. And then it's just, considering what's the advantage of having one or the other, right? And my also, the other thing about having an accordion is think about how it replaces an entire band, right? This is a cost-effective instrument if you're hiring
And it's mobile, so it's
mobile.
easy for someone to just, put it on and walk around and play. And I did find one piece of information that I know you know, because obviously you know just about everything about this. The term piano accordion was coined by Guido Dero in
Okay.
1910.
Yeah, in 1910, right? That's what you
Yes,
saw?
yes.
Yeah. So Dero, he's a huge part of my research. He's kind of, he comes here from northern Italy, and he has like a royal bloodline. So they called him the Count Dero, right? That's where that came from.
Exactly.
And the history goes that he was supposed to be lined up to get married, and he didn't want to go that route. So he hops in a boat, goes to Washington, and decides, "I'm going to work with my uncle. There's lumber mills there and coal mines and a lot of opportunities." So Dero ends up, he's already played accordion. Remember that he was, and if you look at his army records from Italy, he was already a musician in the infantry. So in Italy, so he already demonstrated, you know, abilities and being good at what he did. But then he came to Washington. He ends up getting sponsored by a company out here, Vanconi, I believe. And they put him on tour, you know, saying, if you use our accordion, you know, we'll let you keep it, that kind of a thing. And that was a common arrangement, you know. So he plays their Yukon Alaska Fair, which was their kind of, you know, expo for of the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest. And then his name gets to be known in vaudeville. Later, he moves down to San Francisco. And the reason why, going back to your question, how he kind of connects the pieces here, how he coined it, the belief is that because, you know, when he starts working with Guarini Factory, because they also put him, they gave him an Guarini accordion, said, go to the fair and go put our accordions out there for everyone to see. So he gives them suggestions on how to improve the accordion. And he says, okay, I want you to have this part of the keyboard this way, or I want to add an extra key here. So that's the belief as to what happens. Yeah.
The competition must have been fierce back then if there were that many to get their name out there. So I could see where if he was kind of like this kind of a star, so to speak, he could.
He was the highest paid musician as far as an accordionist is concerned. He was making, I have the notes somewhere where it was $500 or $600 a week. And it was in the 1920s.
Oh, that's incredible.
It's incredible.
Astronomical amount of money. I mean, I'm no financier, but that's crazy money. So
there's a Western Union telegram from Groman from LA, right? And so it shows him saying, here's how much I want to make for the week. And it was okay, you know.
That'd be the same Groman from the Chinese theater?
Yep, correct. Sid Groman.
I figured that, yes.
Yeah. So he was on tour out here in the West Coast. He played the Orpheum circuit. He did all of the vaudeville circuit, and he had a lot of money, and the guy was good too. You can still listen. I was just looking at the archive at UC Santa Barbara. He has his Columbia records, the Edison Ambersol, you know, those old discs that
yes.
We have recordings of him on those types of mediums, which is incredible. Yeah.
No, that really is. So you have all these companies manufacturing the instrument. You're obviously selling the instrument. There had to be schools to learn how to play the instrument. So tell me a little bit about those days. I guess, what is this, like the 20s, 30s, 40s? And Perfect. Then we'll talk more modern.
Yeah. So at the time, when you have a superstar like that, you know, on the cover of these, you know, the Orpheum Circuit papers and pamphlets, and you've got, you know, news circulating about him, the accordion is going to be this kind of symbol of achievement, too. That's another thing that I believe in, is that you see an outward symbol that's going, oh, that's somebody that made it with this instrument. Maybe I can do that, too. But I do want to make sure that, you know, there's an entire community here of publishers, producers, makers, repairmen, that make this thing tick. And in North Beach, if you looked at the map, even from the 20s into the 30s, on Columbus, you can easily see somebody walking across from a studio, going to the music store, going, hey, can you hook me up with this? And, oh, can you repair this over lunch? And you can. So that's kind of what I do, is I curate and recreate what could have happened, you know, on a typical day. Now, the 30s is interesting because we are going to see accordion schools come about. And there are photos in existence of huge accordion schools, 100, 200, up to 500 students in any given studio. And the teachers out here, Angelo Cagnazzo was the big one, and he taught Dick Contino. And he taught Lou DiMaggio, who's 91 now, and he's one of my interviews, and he's also relation to baseball DiMaggio.
And he ended up, wow, yeah, that's incredible. That's
he lives incredible. Out here. He was 45 minutes from me.
And Dick Contino was known all over the country. I mean, I know who Dick Contino is. I remember Dick Contino performing in the Chicagoland area at Italian Fest.
Oh, that's amazing that you got to see
it. I would say maybe 30 years ago. Something
oh,
like that.
Amazing.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And that's a lasting name. So this guy, Angelo, is the one that kind of starts, you know, teaching these young people. And it's amazing. He's not, Angelo wasn't this incredible, you know, flourishing, you know, flamboyant personality. He was a good teacher and he had good foundational skills. And what he would do, the model was that you would come live with him for a couple months and he'd put you up, but you would have to learn and you would have to be dedicated every day. And in my interviews, I know Lou told me he fed him as him and his wife hung out, like they had a really great little family unit, but the idea was immersion, learn by immersion. So that was for unique students who he could tell had very strong talent. But everything else was a pretty much, you know, a school type of idea where you came in, you studied. A lot of these studios, and Darrow actually had a studio right there in North Beach. And he also, he taught, but he really didn't enjoy it. He was the performer. He was not necessarily the educator. And I think you know people like that, that do better through
yes.
performance. They're not meant to teach. And he was not the best teacher. And so in all of the reviews I've seen and the oral histories that I've heard, he wasn't fun to work with in that capacity. But then you go, you know, if you go into the late 30s, into the 40s, you'll start to see that these schools are going to perform all around the Bay Area for different functions. 4th of July, the Golden Gate exposition that was held on Treasure Island. There was one that, so you're going to see, and that one's great. I've never seen the photo, but apparently there were 1,000 accordions that day. So,
oh my God, that's incredible. That would be a hell of a photo. Yes, though, you would say the majority of the people studying it, it was more for a hobby though, right? This wasn't for a potential career.
No. And so it just kind of had this apex where everybody was so interested, you know, because it was cool and unique and I want one of these things. And, you know, I think you have to really reconsider to the cost of a very nice accordion, like something from Guarini or Colombo, that's 1 year's salary. So a lot of these companies had to start coming out with lower quality models, and not necessarily by the worksmen or the labor, but the fact of the materials. So they had to start finding material that was cheaper to produce because everybody.
If possibly, I don't mean to interrupt. No. Did they possibly rent them?
Yeah, you can rent them.
Had a big performance or something like that.
Yep. You could rent them. Another thing they used to do was give you the accordion if you were performing out, you know, as long as it had the studio's name or it had the company name on it, then you could effectively keep it after a specific time that you had to appear in public. And it was, you know, I don't know how many people I've interviewed that have nothing to do with this project that say, oh yeah, I had an accordion sitting in the closet for years. I mean, I just did that for somebody. I helped them get rid of an accordion that they found in a closet because, you know, someone passed away. And this is a very typical story of how many people had one in the house.
I would say probably thousands, because if it was this popular, then you don't throw that out. It sits in a closet in an attic, and then the grandkids end up with it and they don't really know what to do with it. And it looks too cool to throw away. So
that's absolutely the case. People don't know what to do with it, you know? And so also the other part of this is that there were accordion clubs, and we've got one here. We have the San Francisco Accordion Club. There's one in San Jose, Sacramento, Escalon, like all dotting.
Are you talking to this day or are
to
you
this day?
Today, there are all these clubs. Okay, that's amazing. I got to be honest. And is it true that the piano accordion is the official city instrument of San Francisco?
It is, yes.
Amazing as well.
Yeah, this happened in the early 90s. A guy named Tom Terrilia, he was with a band called Those Darn Accordions. He spearheaded this idea that we need to make this the national or the city's instrument. And he went up there to City Hall, gave all of his support. And there were musicians that came out that day to support and show the board why it needed to be named. But truly, it's because this was the birthplace of that instrument. And then if you add on to that, the history of, you know, Frank Morocco was here, Darrow was here, you know, all of these other major powerhouses of accordion performance. They just happen to be Italian, but that's, I think, the other piece of this is that I don't want to forget, of course, there's a lot of like Eastern European families interested in this at the same time. But Italians and the accordion, I think it's synonymous as like part of just growing up with it in the household. And obviously it's also coming in from the dance halls. So something to think about from the 20s, 30s, 40s is that this was typical to hear at a dance hall. Not necessarily if you're going to go see a big band, that's a whole different thing. But if you're out just for an evening and you just want to go out for a dinner dance, it was typical to find accordions, you know, that in that time performing.
And I would assume, because even for me as a young child, which that's going back quite a few years, I remember an accordion player at weddings and whatnot. It was very, very, apparent there. It was very present. You would get an accordion player for a wedding. Was it like that as well in California?
Yes. And I, to this day, you know, I know that the people that I interview, they're, you know, the people out here, Mike Zambaccini, Ron Borelli, they're holding it down, you know, for Italian Americans out here in the North Beach area and then in the Bay in general. But yeah, they're still getting called out to play Santa Lucia at the wedding, and they want, you know, oh, it's a funeral. This is another thing. We had an accordion player when my grandfather passed away. You still do this. And it's right. Part of this idea that for me, I think it's nostalgia and memory that a lot of people go, oh, I remember this growing up. And in our culture, it's part of the timbre that you grew up with. It's this acoustics that was in your environment. You can't explain it, but you know it's there. It's this intangible thing that we don't really speak about too much, but it's, we always had one, right? And I know that a lot of now, if we talk about it, it's hard to get the younger people to play, but there are some people that are coming back that are interested.
So these clubs, they're thriving. I mean, this is like this isn't like a club with like four people, and these are thriving situations.
Yes, these are funded. What are they called? The 501c, you know, they're nonprofits, and they have funding, and you're able to join. A lot of us are doing Zoom. And please note that I know I'm focused on the West Coast, and we do have them in Oregon, Washington, but these are all over. There's a really great one out of Texas and San Antonio, the club out there. There's one in New York. There's one actually in Chicago. You guys,
there's one in Chicago.
Yeah, you have them all over.
Not aware of that. I was just going to say, I don't believe we do have one in Chicago. That's good to hear. I'm glad. But you do say younger people, it is a little bit difficult to get them interested.
Right. So I think what I noticed is that it's a lot of first generation young people that are coming in from other countries outside of Italy that are in the States. So what I see is 6, 7, 8 year olds from Eastern Europe, from India, from China, and their parents love the sound. And so they come to our club and these young people are still playing. And it's so cool to see, you know, 4 year olds playing.
Okay, I got a dumb question. How does a 4 year old hold that big thing?
They make baby size.
Okay. No, that is wonderful. And you know what? I wish that these grandkids, that these thousands that have them in the attic, in the closet, and they go, what am I going to do with it? It would be nice if one of them said, I think I want to learn how to play that. And I'm sure it does happen.
Yes. And that does happen. And I can tell you from my own experience, even at the club that I'm in with San Francisco, by the way, oldest accordion club in America, 1916.
And it's still going.
It's still going.
That's outstanding.
It fizzled out a little during the war years, but it's basically came back. So these young people, they see this accordion going, okay, maybe I'll try that. And then they'll contact us and say, hey, do you have a teacher? Do you know somebody? And that happens often. And actually, when I just went to Potosa Accordion, they're the only and continuing, I think, and the only American accordion factory like left, right? And they're out of Linwood, Washington. And I just interviewed Joe Potosa. And, you know, he just told me that the majority of his clients are under 40 purchasing.
That's encouraging.
It is encouraging. So there is, I think there's a sustainability there and that people want to do this. And it's cool. See, what happened is that right around the 50s.
Damn right, it's cool. It's so cool. I love
right
it.
Around, right around the 50s, you're going to get, you know, the onset of R&B and rock and roll. And you get your 45 record. You've got, you know, the electric guitar. You have amps. You have whammy bars. And that is so freaking cool. And then all of a sudden, the accordion in the windows of the music shops, they start getting less and less space dedicated to accordions and more space given over to guitars.
But you know what? It's kind of like this classic thing where, you know how clothes always come back? There's certain, you know, fashion that'll come back. They say, don't throw that out because one day, you know, 30 years down the road, that's going to be in fashion again. I feel like it's such a classical instrument that, and from what you're telling me and what we've learned, I think it's always going to be there. I think it's always, it'll have its lulls, but I think it's always going to be there.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere. It's obviously, and there's a huge global market too for it. And in Italy, people are still playing it. I was just in Italy in December, and I mean, you still see it.
In the area you spoke about earlier, near Ancona, you went?
I did go to Ancona. I went to Castel Fidardo. I did the tour.
And they're still playing it. It's still popular.
They're still playing it. Yeah, I went with, Francesca Piggini. She's a third generation owner of the factory. And I just talked to her. She walked me through. It was beautiful to see people making accordions and getting paid decent wages and enjoying coffee on their break from their accordion making day. And
that's incredible. That's great. That's great. Yeah. Probably not as many manufacturing as once upon a time, but it's still there.
That's correct. And yes, when you go to the subways in Rome, when you go, you know, even I was at Termini, the station there, you know, in Rome, the train station.
Train station, right.
Buskers everywhere playing, you know, accordion still. And it was in a restaurant. And so it's still going. And out here, the connection is still very strong because these fourth, fifth generation family members that I meet, they can't speak Italian. They've never been to Italy, but they have these names. They go, I'm Italian. And they claim that, which is really beautiful. And I know that there's so much debate about that today, right? About authenticity and all of that. But they have this idea that that sound somehow brings them connection or close to that homeland. And I think it's still something that all of us relate to is just by hearing the timbre of this instrument, how it can connect us instantly to a family or to a memory.
For sure, for sure. And we didn't talk about that coincidence. In Italian, it's La Fisarmonica, and your name is Monica.
It is correct.
I'm sorry I had to be silly like that, but it's the way my mind works. I saw that. I'm like, La Fisarmonica, Monica. So you had it in your blood from the beginning.
Maybe I did. I like this answer. Thank you.
Monica, this was incredible. Yeah, your knowledge of this instrument, the history, everything, you know, how it's made, what it's made, the people, the clubs, thank you so much. This was seriously, this was incredible. This was great. I couldn't think of anybody more that could have given us all this type of information for this instrument.
Great. And I do want to remind you and your listeners, if anybody has any questions or, you know, anything you want to know about either here or in Ancona or names or anybody I can connect you with, just shoot me an email. I'll give Frank my information, but it's mambalal@peralta.edu. That's my working email. And I'm on Instagram and all those things.
Yes, thank you. And I'm just going to repeat it. mambalal at Peralta, peralta.edu. Thank
that's
you
me.
For that offer. Yes. That's great. And you know what I want to say to everybody out there? I encourage your children. Put the baseball to the side. Have them learn the accordion, right? It's such a beautiful instrument. It's such a big part of our people, our culture, and I don't want to see it go away.
No, and I think it's great. Put one in the kids' hands at least. If you can see a young person and they'll just be naturally intrigued by this huge instrument, and don't let them shy away or be intimidated. At least put it in their hands and see how they react. And let's start there.
Very good point. Give them a shot at it. Give them a try. They may not be for them, but might be surprised. So,
yes.
Monica, thank you so much. This was an extreme pleasure for me.
Great. And thank you so much for having me.